We'll get started here. We have a couple of items on our agenda for this afternoon. First up is a discussion of the proposed police policy oversight commission. We have that attached document in our packet, and I assume the chief is here to speak to that topic, so I'll turn it over to Roger.
Thank you. If you recall back when we began discussing intelligence-led policing and the technology that went along with that, there were some concerns expressed about how that technology would be used and how would we know it would be used the way that you authorized and that we were in fact doing what we said we would do. And that led into a discussion with members of the community that it's difficult to have that conversation in a vacuum. That is, you're just talking about technology, actually you're talking about police departments in general. And that's where that discussion went, and I asked admittedly in an entirely unilateral fashion, picking several members from the community to participate in that discussion of what oversight would look like in our community. And some of those members are here now. Alan Witz, representing the Human Rights Commission, the Bar Association, Rebecca Sadarsky from the Governor's Council on Latino and Chicano Affairs, and Jeff Jurowitz, formerly Central Campesino, now Mission 21, representing that. There was also Betsy Singer from the television media, Jay First, who participated at least until it became a conflict of reporting and making news. But I want to thank him for his contribution as well. Rabbi Werner and W.C. Jordan from the NAACP, from the political branch, the NAACP. We had what was essentially a year-long conversation, several meetings to discuss what oversight would look like, and essentially the product you see before you is intended to provide the community with input into how they want to be policed. There's a great deal, obviously, of discretion in police policy, and when we talk particularly in regard to technology, how that technology is used, what people are comfortable with, what they're not, the balance between the privacy interests and the investigative interests and issues from the public safety standpoint. And in order to find a balance point in that, I believe it's essential that we have the direct community input. The way that this mechanism is envisioned to work is that essentially we have a discussion, that is, people that are on the proposed seven-member commission will be at liberty to bring issues forward that they feel are issues of concern for the community in terms of how the police department operates. And we'd have a discussion about policy and procedure. And if we resolve those issues at that level, that's great. That's what we intend to do. If there's still concerns that remain, the alternative, the next recourse is to ask the mayor, as under city charter, he's in charge of the police department, to ask the mayor to weigh in on those issues. And as I work for the mayor, it's usually not hard to resolve those issues at that level. But if that issue still remained, that is, the commission still felt they had concerns about an issue, the mayor has indicated that he believed that that would be appropriate to bring to the council, then either by resolution or public hearing, that we can resolve issues of policy for the police department. It is not intended that, nor does state law allow that this be an investigative body. It is not. It is a management function for the police department to manage staff and appropriately address issues of complaints against officers, those kind of things. I do believe, however, that it is appropriate and there does need to be a mechanism to make sure that those things are done appropriately. That is to review my work, not the work of officers, but to make sure that I'm appropriately addressing things, management issues within the department, and where there are issues of concern, that there be a viable mechanism to bring those forward and to address those effectively, whether they be through that discussion or whether they be referred to the mayor or ultimately be referred to you. So that's what the intent of the ordinance is, and with that introduction, those members of the council here in regard to the process and how they wound up where they did with the proposal for this ordinance, sure they'd be happy to answer the questions, and I certainly would, but I'll leave it to you from there.
All right, who wants to start? Mr. Bildebak, do you have a question?
No, I'm going to listen for a while.
Okay. Well, I'll start off then. I had a question. The appointment process, I understand that it's the mayoral process, so this is not subject to council approval, correct?
The members did. I had to.
Yeah, the mayor did indicate that he, nobody speaks for the mayor, but when in our discussion, he did indicate that he wished that to be a council approval for appointments to this. That the mayor would go through his normal vetting process of people and forward the names to the council.
So we would treat it much like we do our other boards.
Yeah,
and
that's currently not phrased. It says with the consent of the council.
Okay.
I think that's the way virtually all of our boards are that way. So
okay.
That would be what I would suggest that we add.
So we would need to make that change. That, and then the only other comment I had, and Roger, you already touched on it. As much as what you outlined, the duties and authorities of the commission, you also outlined what they are cannot do, and which is, and you touched on the officer disciplinary. So, typical scenario, if someone has a complaint against the conduct of an officer, they would not come bring it to this commission. There's a prescribed process for handling that.
That's correct. We don't anticipate that. By virtue of the creation of the commission, it's likely that people would seek out members of the commission or make a complaint. But there is a process that they would be referred to our professional standards manager for investigation and disposition of that complaint. What you see there in the language is actually a reflection of state law that identifies what civilian review panels can and cannot do. And that is reflected in that ordinance, but also I think the philosophy being that management of the police department remains with the police department, but the oversight, the to make sure that management is doing its job, if you will, is the purview of the commission.
Okay. Certainly other council members can ask questions. One of the things I'd like to do, since we have some of the group here that helped develop this, I can open it up and see if they have any additional comments they'd like to share in addition to what the chief has said already. So I just want to make that opportunity available to you. You don't have to comment, but if you'd like to, I think this is an important topic. So I'd appreciate hearing other thoughts if there are any.
Well, I could make the comment that some of the things we spoke about, where if members of the public had concerns about privacy issues with new and improving technology, this could be something that could be within the purview of this commission on the basis that we wouldn't be an investigative body, but it could be something that we could comment on.
Anyone else?
Not to pry, but I actually specifically want to hear from WC and one of you two about whether you feel that this ordinance is appropriate for the concerns that have been expressed in the community.
Can you be a little more specific?
Well, I mean, do you have a copy of the proposed ordinance?
I'm aware of what's
okay.
In the ordinance. I've looked over it many times.
I mean, do you support the way that it's written, or do you have concerns?
We arrived at this ordinance after a lot of compromise, and I will say that a lot of that compromise did come because of things that I was saying.
Okay.
I would support this ordinance in its current form. If I were to draft it on my own, it might look a little different, but I'm not the king of the world. And I think that this ordinance will be sufficient to fulfill the needs of the community.
Mr. Jordan?
Okay. We had a lot of back and forth from drafting this, and there were a lot of different issues on the table. I do support the ordinance. feel like that we negotiated the best we could to get the best out of it. It is something new. I think the Oversight Commission is something long overdue for Homestead County. So I'm excited about getting started with it and moving it forward. I'm sure that as the process goes on, there may be some changes down the road based on what comes up after it's implemented. But at this point, I think that it was the best job that we could do, given the whole group, and I do support it.
Mike, it sounds like maybe you have some concerns of your own.
No, my concern is that I don't have the same concerns as some of the constituencies that you're representing. And I want to make sure that you had your opportunity to be heard here too before, you know, before I weigh in with any of mine. So this is part of trying to listen a little bit better, and want to make sure that has some explicit comments for me. And the other thing I'd ask for Chief Peterson, are there any concerns that have been brought up to you that with regards to this ordinance that just were not captured by the final product?
Well, I think it has been represented that it is the best balance we could find.
Okay.
And I think that's probably proven by the fact that everybody dislikes this equally, but for different reasons. and it's kind of like refereeing a hockey game. If nobody's happy with you, it's probably, you know, about as best you can do. I think that when we tried to capture the essence of this ordinance, you will see in there that it is not really specific as to the commission will do this or investigate mm-hmm. this, or that they will address this particular issue. And the reason is because we as a group felt it was really important that the commission have the ability to respond to issues of concerns that they arise, and we couldn't really contemplate what that might be. So we wanted to give that commission the ability and the authority to actually represent the concerns of the community, not be restricted to certain areas or that perception that certain things were off limits. And we tried to identify very clearly that, you know, management of the department is management of the department, and I'm not going to say that way. Mm-hmm. But the issues of concern as to, you know, police policy, the particularly as they raise to privacy concerns and those type of issues, that we really want to be transparent in this and not limit their ability to look into those issues and weigh in, provide us that community input.
So, Mr. Campion and then Ms. Means.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you for everyone that participated in this. I'm excited to hear that it was the product of compromise, because most of the best legislation in the world tends to be the product of compromise. One concern that I took away from this is that I think it is important that we call out some of the particulars of nomination, especially indicating organizations that we feel need to be represented, to make sure that this is indicative of policy as a community. One aspect that I've been, and I've spoken a little bit about, you know, my work knowledge leading into my understanding of intelligence-led policing, is I do think it's imperative that we have someone on the commission that's going to have that technology perspective, because as these technologies continue to become a bigger component of our law enforcement, I can see that the community having an understanding of how those technologies will affect their privacy, will affect police making of the future and those sorts of decisions. So that was one thing I kind of felt maybe doesn't need to be codified in the ordinance, but as we go to look to fill some of these positions, I think it would be imperative that we have someone on the commission that can kind of talk to the mechanics of large data sets and how that sorting works and how we highlight some of that. And I realize that the police department plays an important role there, but I think we can complement it with some, maybe the inappropriate word civilian, but some kind of general public knowledge on that stuff would be important to me.
You know, Nick, at first I thought the same way, that, oh, we need to have someone who's involved in technology on this, and then I came to think differently, and the reason I came to think differently is that the commission can hire outside consultants, independent consultants, that are trained specifically on intelligence-led policing and predictive policing. And I think that the most important qualification for the individuals should not be any technology background or background of that nature, but rather the background that is specified in the ordinance right now, that is that they have an interest or experience with social justice and human rights, and moreover, that they are deeply connected within their communities, because really, it's that connection within the communities that's going to raise the voice of the Rochester community.
And I think what you're saying, you can buy that sort of technical expertise, which is valuable. I get that.
Network and relationships.
But the fundamental substantive formation of this group is, as you say, someone with a passion or skill or whatever in human rights and social justice.
I don't think that we'll find that those sets are disjoint, that there are people who are both involved in our community as well as being technologists. And I think you can buy that expertise, and I think that's maybe fair. I don't. The environment might play some portion of the role in that, and our budget environment might play part of that. It would be with the volume of technology experts in our community, I would be impressed if we cannot find someone that would fit both criteria. And I'm not suggesting adding it as an additional criteria, merely that as we search for candidates, we weigh that proportionally.
That'll be a challenge for the mayor. I know that skill set. Mr. Mayor, your comment?
Yeah, I have a couple questions on that. You had asked the one about the, and we're going to add that with consent of the council. But under the sub 3B, it says that when there's an opening, basically for whatever reason, the commission, in consultation with the Rochester branch of NAACP and the Human Rights Commission, shall nominate a person to fill the vacant position. So do I understand that then that we would not use the process that we usually use for any board is we run an ad in the paper and people come in and they get interviewed. This sounds like it would be, and I don't have a problem with it, just for clarification, it sounds like it would be the commission then that would seek out applicants and send it to that person, to the mayor, to either endorse or not, and bring it forward. Do I read that correctly that way?
And now that I read it, I understand that what you're saying, that kind of the language is a little conflicting. We talked earlier about the process for selecting and appointing, but if you take this literally, beyond the initial appointment,
right,
subdivision 3B sort of dictates going forward,
mm-hmm,
is what you're saying, right?
Yep. Yeah, so question about, because it sounds like then the body, the commission, is the one that will at least recommend persons, and that's fine. But that changes it, and like again, I say I don't have a problem with it. It changes how we did the first ones that are going to be on it, and how we do it for any other board that we have. And I just want to be clear if that's what the intention was, is that the commission would bring forward, and then it always gives that option that if I decline, then the commission again has to then bring somebody forward. If that's what we mean.
So
that's how I understand it.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, if I may just say this, in the discussions when we were considering this particular point, it's not as if the commission wouldn't be looking very broadly and putting information out there that there is a position available.
Right.
It would be that having considered all of the applicants, they would then be put forward.
Now, you just said considering the applicants.
Yes.
So they would get the applicants?
So ultimately, the commission would perhaps put an advert out that says there's a vacancy available. There may be other ways of doing it, but it's not as if the commission would select people, put names forward, and in any way attempt to be exclusive.
And it's maybe just more logistics of it, that how if that's what we want.
It's important to clarify. Mr. Gosley, are we interpreting it correctly?
Well, that's how it reads.
Okay.
I was just going to suggest that for the Charter Commission, members are appointed by the district court. But to get the district court people to consider, we go through the mayor's application process. I don't think there'd be any problem doing the same thing here. You would say that there's going to be a vacancy on the Oversight Commission. Applications can be submitted through Donna, and then you just send them to the commission.
I didn't think we got any of them for the Charter Commission.
We had four.
But they just pass through your office?
Yeah, they just pass from Donna.
So I don't interview them.
You don't
no.
do okay. anything with them.
That's state law.
You're right. That's why I thought that was different than
Charter Commission is state law.
Yep.
So what Mr. Gosley is suggesting is at least a consistent process that says even if the commissioner is the one reviewing the applicants, they would the advertising would come through the city.
They could.
Applications could pass through the mayor's office.
I'm not telling them they have to.
No, no, no.
This doesn't say that, but that's certainly a process that you could use.
Right.
Why doesn't this operate the same as every other board you have?
I think that the rationale behind the current appointment process was to keep it community-based and to make sure that, well, I'll just be very frank about it. In commissions, police oversight commissions in other cities in the past, the commissions have been stacked with individuals who don't necessarily have a foot in the community or the interest of social justice and human rights at heart. I've heard of commissions that were completely stacked with former police officers. I know that there are other or other sections of this ordinance that prohibit current or former city
right.
employees from participating, but the appointment process was really meant to make sure that it was grassroots and just entrenched in the community and raising up the voices from the bottom.
Right. And from my take, and I'm not debating that at all, to me it's just purely a logistics question because it sounds like the language we have, Subdivision 2, really talks about the initial creation and the mayor's role in that, but then thereafter the commission plays the role in vetting and selecting future commission members. And I'm just talking about the logistics of how do you mechanically receive those applications and so forth. We have a process that we've used for other boards and commissions that's easily understood. That's all just logistic. Mr. Hickey?
I'd be comfortable maintaining our current system. I mean, we've got a lot of important boards and commissions. Kind of the heart of the system is the mayor. I mean, at the heart of it, if you don't have a mayor that's got the best interest of the city and the process at heart, you're going to get a bad result. So really, our whole system is predicated on the interview process the mayor does with the final concurrence of the council. And I think, again, it's a process that served us well for other commissions. And, I know the mayor puts a lot of time into it, and I think it's a process that served us well.
My only rebuttal to that would be sometimes it's good to have that arm's length, and with the Charter Commission is a great example. Now, I realize that's dictated largely by law, but nevertheless, it keeps us at a little bit of an arm's length arrangement, very important board, but sometimes there's merit in that. That's just a thought that comes to mind.
And another question on the Subdivision 3. So, I understand the intent of Subdivision 3D. No current or former employees of the city of Rochester. And again, I understand the intent is to prevent conflict of interest. That seems pretty broad, lifetime ban. And again, are there any caveats? If someone works a summer job with Park and Rec while they're in college, do they have a lifetime ban of ever being part of this process? I mean, it seems pretty sweeping. And again, I don't have a problem with the intent. We don't want a conflict of interest. We don't want a board that's stacked. But that seems like a pretty big stick.
That's what it says. I guess I would echo what you say. Interestingly enough, we would all ban ourselves from it then as well. So,
yeah.
But here's the thing, the population of Rochester, 1% or so are going to have city affiliations. So I mean, we could probably do pretty well with the other 99%. I just hate disqualifying myself from opportunities.
Mr. Quenville had a comment, and then I need to come back to Ms. Means.
I want to speak to that Subdivision 3B again. From my viewpoint, I think it's rather unusual to appoint a commission and then have that commission determine from here on out the compensation of the membership. And so that bothers me somewhat to have the mayor and council endorse a commission and then turn over his perpetual membership to that commission. I think it's rather unusual, and I'd recommend that you don't go there.
Ms. Means, you have a comment? Question?
I'd like to hear more about this subdivision, this sub-3B, but I'm just really pleased that there's going to be support for the commission. I'm glad that we have this oversight policy in front of us. It's a fluid policy. I hope that as needed, we can edit and update, make revisions. And do I understand that the commissioners will then review or share concerns, but it doesn't move over into the federal law or the data practices or data privacy issues that would go through the formal process through the chief?
As far as discussions on policy?
Is it just policy, or are there, will they be taking complaints as well?
Well, as I said, if there's complaints, that is handled differently than concerns about policy. Or essentially, when we're talking about allegations that something has been done wrong, there's an investigative process that determines, you know, appropriate action. If it's a question that it's not that an employee did something wrong, but the policy itself is wrong, that's where I think the discussion lies with the commission. And that certainly incorporates data practices and privacy concerns, as well as procedural concerns.
Thank you. Okay, I'll come back. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes. Well, again, with that B section there, it still does come to the mayor to, and there it's declined to a point, so there's still that process. It still comes to the mayor at that point. I wouldn't even call it a concern. It was more the logistics of it that then I take it that my associate, our office won't be the one that would run an ad in the paper. It's up to the commission to do it. Because it's got to be, they're the ones that are going to be contacting the NAACP, the Human Rights Commission, and forwarding a name or names to the mayor to basically... you know, it's written more in the negative, if I decline to a point, otherwise that person would go forward. So when I read it, actually while I was out in D.C. looking at it, I thought, okay, let me get that straight, and I didn't have it printed out until today, but so that was one of my questions. As an aside, too, it is, I'll give the chief one, you haven't even seen this yet, but Strengthening Police Community Relations in American Cities. There's a whole task force with the U.S. Conference of Mayors that's working on this. There's another group that is actually the president of the United States had structured, and that group, the co-chairs, one of them is Philadelphia Police Department Commissioner Chuck Ramsey, another is a professor at George Mason University, and then there's a whole list. They've got a whole bunch of listening sessions, of which one is next week in Cincinnati, then it's Phoenix, and then D.C., and then March 2nd, they have to have a report that's kind of similar to what this one that was put together for the U.S. Conference of Mayors has to go to the President of the United States with specifics, not just generalizations. It is also interesting, it was pointed out, that the United States is unique in the sense that police departments report to the mayor. That doesn't happen in most other countries in the world. That just it's unique to the United States. The other, which was interesting, the term intelligence-led policing, it was acknowledged that that seems to be offensive at times, and one suggestion was, there were a couple of them, but it was predictive-led policing. And so some don't look at the individuals, but it's where do certain events happen. And that was actually a presentation, I think Motorola had that. So it was very, very interesting what was going on out there, and this all does kind of tie together. And certainly a lot of that, if not all of it, has been generated because of what has taken place in the country. But very fascinating. But so my question was, I think we took care of the one with the consent of the council. And then I think I would, you know, I'm maybe okay with that B if we, you know, just that it was clarification. And maybe again at that point, it would be with consent of the council as it comes back through.
If I can comment on one section that you're addressing, that was, I think it's fair to say, that it generated the most discussion amongst the committee that drafting this ordinance. And the thought was is we as a group wanted to look beyond current circumstance and make what is a vital function as apolitical as possible. That is, that it didn't rely simply on who was elected mayor or who might be the police chief at any given time, that it would really perpetuate itself in terms of this focus on social justice issues. And recognizing the mayor's role in appointing people, I think the group, the consensus, felt it was important that essentially prospective members be vetted in a way by the commission that would perpetuate beyond, as I said, simply who may be in the mayor's office at any given time or who may be in my chair at any given time, that the commission have a role in that selection in order to perpetuate those social justice interests. That was, if I'm not misstating that, I think that was the view.
And I personally don't have an issue with that, letting the commission do the vetting. And we're talking about maybe that final step of the approval, and I'm trying to think through a scenario where that would be important. But Mr. Campion.
So I think I will voice the counter argument, which is the problem to me with forming a commission and setting them a sail on their own is that there is missing that, you know, I appreciate the mayor can kind of decline, but he can only seemingly decline a candidate that's presented by the commission. So we could again get in this case where the commission just continues to put their, you know, people that they decide. And frankly, I'm going to throw out a absurd example of this is just the commission going with their own mission that's separate from what the, you know, as the elected representatives of the city, we think is the direction the city should be moving. And I think what's kind of missing here is that accountability. I mean, frankly, we're all accountable to the community via an election process. It's the idea that even though this is all about social justice and representing that, and I understand the value of continuity of concept, accountability is the important part for every board in the city, and the Charter Commission works separately solely because, in my mind, of the legal definition of what the Charter Commission's entitled to do. I can't imagine that we would sit up here and say the Planning and Zoning Commission should operate different because, you know, quickly the Planning and Zoning Commission might decide that our planning destination is entirely different than what the City Council decides. And I just think that it's interesting to me that, you know, we would not have that same level of accountability for this commission as well.
So you would be satisfied with a change that said the commission would essentially vet candidates and go through the selection, and it's the wording here is subject to the final appointment by the mayor and council.
Maybe I can come around to that if it's the desire of the rest of the council. To me, the idea that the commission vets will leave the commission in a difficult, tenuous position if we decide to appoint someone who was not vetted correctly, or sorry, we don't think the vetting worked correctly. So I think that kind of would spoil the well or poison the well a little bit if we then came back with someone who wasn't on their approved list and said, you know, this is the new member. I mean, everyone will know that. It's public knowledge who was approved and who was not approved.
But I think we have that checkpoint because it would come to the council, mayor, and council, and if we're getting feedback that a particular candidate is just not appropriate for whatever reason, we'll have that opportunity to say no, just like we do other boards. But I kind of like the idea of letting the commission vet candidates because, you know, it might not be my forte, you know, some of the attributes that they're looking at. As long as I agree with you that there's some accountability here,
it's just
as long as there's the council in the process. Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Wojcik.
Yeah, I'm still not comfortable with it. Again, this is a very important commission, but we have a lot of important commissions, planning and zoning, heritage preservation. If the intent is to, you know, isolate this or insulate this against some future mayor who's not going to have the same good judgment as our current mayor, I mean, the whole process, I mean, every commission in the city is going to face this. So I don't think you can really do that. I mean, I mean, I think that's our process. We count on the mayor, and then the check of that is the city council to approve it. You know, if the mayor's getting off track, and if you got the whole city council and the whole mayor off track, then I guess the electorate's, you know.
And they get what they deserve.
You get the government they deserve.
I could go either way on this one. I'm inclined to support what's here only because this is a commission that has the stamp of the community that was interested in it on it right now. So I'm willing to, this is what they're okay with. I have some, you know, I share some of the concerns of my colleague. Of course, we always, we do have the final say because we control the Rochester Code of Ordinances too. So, this can be changed at any point if need be. The fact that, you know, we have the fight, it's not, the way this reads, it does say in subdivision 3B, it does say that the commission in consultation with the Rochester branch of the NAACP and Olmsted County Human Rights Commission. I would have personally liked to have seen a little bit in there or other interested parties. I think that's kind of implied.
There's a point under it, C, that says
other parties. They are encouraged to recommend candidates, but not necessarily. Yeah. Okay, if that's, well, like I say, I'm okay with what's here because I want this to have the stamp of the community and not the stamp of me on it.
Ms. Mean?
I was just saying, I think since it is a community-led initiative, I like the idea of the commission being involved in this election. And the mayor and the council will approve as we have in the others. However, in this particular case, I'd like to have the list before the council meeting. I'd like to have it ahead of the council meeting, so if there are any issues, we can bring those up before it becomes available in the public hearing.
The list
that makes sense.
What are
the
you
list
asking
of the nominees or
of all the candidates that applied, not just the ones being forwarded?
The ones that are coming for approval by the council.
Right. Oh,
to
okay.
Have those prior to have those at a time that gives us an opportunity to review and ask questions or to talk to the mayor or talk to the chair of the commission.
Not just in the packet, you know, a couple
yes.
days before the
meeting. Yes, exactly. That's it, exactly.
All right. Other comments? Mr. Hickey.
This is a smaller point, but back to the lifetime ban. I mean, if the intent is to not have former police officers on there, then I think maybe we should say that. Again, I think it's a pretty broad stroke to ban anybody who's ever worked in any capacity with the city, no matter how many years ago. It just seems like I understand the intent, but if that's what we're trying to do, then we should just say no former police officers. I assume that's just as legal as saying no former city employees, right?
It is.
So, I mean, if that's the intent, I mean, I wasn't there for the discussions, but it just seems like a pretty broad stroke.
I mean, and Hickey brings up a simple example, you know, like a college student that happened to work one summer in the parks department. Maybe that one didn't cross the minds of the group. I don't know.
What your group responded. I think the intent was obviously to avoid a potential conflict of interest. People that were interested in the social justice issues as opposed to, as I said, if you looked at the process of how this would work, the police department, city employees, if you will, are very well represented in the process because we're half of that discussion. And the intent of the commission was not to load the other half when people might have like-minded views. So it was intended to be a, you know, legitimate discussion about community concerns without loading, you know, as I said, the particular point of view. From my perspective, the department's point of view, as I said, that's, I think that the people on the commission would tell you, you know, that's what we're trying to address, is you know, get beyond the mechanisms currently in place to make policy and receive legitimate community input. Whether we agree or not, that's another issue, but in order to get that input, you don't get it from like-minded people, and that's what they would.
Yeah. And I don't think there was a question of that. As Mr. Hickey said, I think we were talking specifically law enforcement, being careful there.
And I think all we're really talking about in any of these changes, we're just trying to be very careful in whatever language we adopt that we don't have unintended consequences. You know, it's written a certain way, and once it's enacted, you know, wow, didn't think of that. And granted, we can change it over time if it needs to be adjusted. So far, I'm hearing three areas of concern. One is just the mayor's comment about wanting to have the mayoral approval subject to the council confirmation. We have a question about how to handle the broad nature of current and former employees of the city of Rochester, and whether we are comfortable with that subdivision 3B, leaving that language as is for now. So, where are we at, Mr. Gosley?
I think you also need to understand that this is a little bit broader than maybe you thought it was when you started. It's not just intelligence-based police. It's all policies. Yes. So that's question number one.
I am completely okay with that.
With what?
That it's broad. It covers policing policies.
I think by design we wanted it to be a little bit broad, and not try to weigh it down with too many specifics. Now I don't know if we take the approach of adopting the language largely as stands with a couple of minor tweaks, knowing, as Mr. Wojcik said, that we can revisit it at any time if something doesn't seem to be working. What are your thoughts? Mr. Hickey?
I haven't changed my mind.
Yeah, I guess I echo the sentiment of Councilmember Hickey here that I'm still not entirely sold on the value behind eliminating mayoral and council oversight here. I think that the standard, I just assume see this operate under the standard process of board, or else I can see a situation where we have historical preservation, planning and zoning, the Energy Commission, all wanting to do their own internal vetting of candidates. And it's not that I pray that this doesn't happen to everyone, but I just seen some boards where you get a little bit of groupthink can happen. And I hope it would never happen to this commission. And I don't even want to suggest that that's what's happening today. But just when you set your own kind of internal thing, it can be one of those, you can kind of have those blinders on to some things that elected officials now, you know, we're held accountable every 2 years or 4 years, depending on what you're doing, to answer for. So I think it's worthwhile to seriously consider whether the deviation from historical precedents is the right thing to do here.
Okay. Mr. Bilderbach said he wanted to listen for a while. Not your turn.
I think it's, I give a lot of credit to the chief and the people who took part in this process. I was not probably willing to go along with some of the things earlier, but listening is important. And when you got to hear the gentleman talk about how much they had to compromise, I think it's important that we listen to the public. I think it's important that it comes back to the mayor and the council. I think that's the right thing to do, and that's the correct way to do it. I do find the fact that replacing members is going to be through the Human Rights Commission and the Diversity Council. I do believe that Mr. Wojcik had a good point on the fact that committees that were interested should also be able to put names in. I think that's important. When it all is said and done, I'm willing to give this a try. I think it's important, and granted it's different than what we do with things that normally with other commissions, but I think it's important that we don't lock ourselves into one way of doing things all the time and not try different things. And this could be very interesting. I'm willing to give it a try.
With completely as written, or are you suggesting any modifications?
I think the change that needs to be is the one that was discussed by the mayor about having mayor and the council confirm. I think that part is. Otherwise, the rest of it, I'm ready to try. I would like to see this group make the, not the council, but the group to decide if there should be other groups that if that wording should be changed a little bit so that there are other opportunities from groups that might have an interest. I'd like you to consider that. Well, no, and I'm interested in
yes,
what you
that
say.
Yes, that is what I want to.
Yeah,
that is definitely what I want. I wish that it was more expansive.
Yeah, and I'd like to see that happen, but otherwise I'm going to try something a little different. We need to go forward with this.
And I think it's been stated by a couple of folks that this is important because we invited community input and they really worked hard to draft this. For lack of a better word, I'm not sure I want to second guess their efforts at this point.
Yeah. I'm not always going to say this, but you guys have persuaded me. I think that I'm on board now. That like I said, let no one call me immovable. I've thus been persuaded. I can support it.
They'll call you a lot of things. You won't. That's not the worst of it.
So, and I appreciate what Mr. Hickey has been saying. So I would guess that he is still opposed.
He's been pretty consistent.
To the language presented.
You're correct.
So where are we at? Are people agreeable with the language, generally agreeable with the language as presented with the change that the mayor has suggested, the council confirmation?
On both, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then the only other question that I need answered is, what do you want to do with former city employees? You want to limit it to police officers, to full-time employees,
Maybe that's a question for the group. Maybe you didn't consider the part-time park employee or the college student, and maybe your intent was truly to limit law enforcement. Yeah. What do you want? What was the intent?
Are mayor and council, are they viewed as employees? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we considered the full extent of what was discussed here this afternoon, actually. And it was essentially a conflict of interest concern, and there may be ways of doing this. It may be that one is more specific, or maybe by time. One says somebody who was a full-time employee, but no less than 7 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. I mean, it's. So I mean, there would be a number of ways that we could possibly do this to meet the concerns that have been expressed here.
But I'd like that figured out by the commission before it comes to the council for final approval, as well as the other one that we discussed.
And I think that's part of the discussion today, to give feedback. And maybe now that that's been brought to light, you would suggest slightly different language. Mr. Campbell.
If we're asking them to make a recommendation, it sounds like they're making a recommendation. Can we just ask that prior service to the city be disclosed as part of the application process, and that they weigh that as a component of whether or not they recommend them to the mayor, instead of, because I can also see a situation where you have an outstanding, you know, former police officer that wants to service the community in this way too, and you decide that, you know, now he's been verbally or, you know, explicitly removed, instead of having that. It's just weird to me that we're going to use judgment in so many different ways, but then when it comes to civic service or the city, we're going to say, no, it's a strict rule.
Well, and I think the language is there for some certain rationale. And again, I'm not at a point where I want to start second-guessing the language. Now that the question has been brought up, I'd like to turn it back to the group to see if they could suggest some language that would address some of those concerns. Let them do it. Mr. Woodard.
May I propose, since this is... I think Councilmember Hickey brings up a good point, and I could go either way. I'm really not too pushy on this one way or the other. Perhaps we it sounds like we have consensus on everything else. Let's take this back to the group for, give them 2 weeks and bring it back to us, the final version, and we put it on the February 3rd meeting? Is that right?
Second.
Evening.
Second.
Ms. Means.
Or we can add something like, unless there's some, you know, exemplary circumstances or some unique circumstances that would override the Steve.
Well, and I think all we're saying is let the group talk about it and come up with some language that they feel is acceptable, Mr. Hickey.
I think we probably want to discuss it at the COW prior.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, okay, perfect.
Yep.
Right. That's what we're suggesting.
Yeah.
Come back in.
Well, and then assuming we're ready to go, I mean,
weeks.
We have it for the meeting that night.
And Yeah, if it's really not workable, then it will not happen that night.
Yep.
So does that work, Roger? We've made a few suggestions. Come back on the second.
Anything else you need from us?
All right.
Nope.
Okay. Good deal.
I don't want to, with the input from the community, I'd want to point out that discussion with staff, and I don't know, Kent Perlick is here. He represents our line staff folks, and didn't want to put words in his mouth, you know, or anything else, but I didn't want to exclude him from the chance to comment if he had concerns or whatever. But I did ask him to be here for that purpose, so I didn't want you to overlook the fact.
No, that's good. Thank you for pointing that out.
I've had my chance to listen to, I guess. As the chief pointed out, Sergeant Kent Perlick here with the police department, and I do represent our union of our officers and sergeants. You know, we do stand with the chief, I guess, when it comes to transparency with our organization and trying to work and build those community relations. We just look for mechanisms and how to do that. And this is one of those mechanisms we're looking at here. That being said, I don't know necessarily that we oppose this particular oversight committee. But under the way of which it's written, I think I'm hearing some of your concerns or some of our concerns as well. And so we don't necessarily support it the way in which it's written as well. There's just a couple of concerns that kind of come up whenever you have an oversight committee. It comes down to really who's filling those positions and what are the intent behind filling this position. We want to ensure that it is with the best intent that is going in the direction which the city has the same goals. Sometimes there's underlying ulterior motives, and I guess when we see particular interest groups that specifically have seats at the table here, and I question to why there's just a limited number of seats that are specifically for certain groups, and not just in the interest of all. There's also, I guess, the other concern I guess that I express here too is this is all about an education process to the public for us. It's a two-way street. And so, you know, in fulfilling those positions, I think we would ask and would hope that there would be some type of at least training or interest, I guess, or expectations of some training or informal through our department that they can get some expertise input of some sort or insight rather than just going at it blindly. Limiting the commission itself, the committee here, from either, certainly I can understand why they would want to limit from having police interject perhaps in that perception of persuasion, but I think there's also something to be said about what they can add to the conversation as well. And again, it's all about going in the direction for the good of the whole, for the city. And I was just down a path here of one particular special interest group. I'm not pointing out any specific one in general here, just generalizing. With those two points, I guess, really, that's really the only thing that we have a concern here. So, again, I guess we don't stand in opposition, but we would hope that the council and the mayor choose wisely.
Okay. Always.
One piece of good news, I think, is that the city of Rochester, I think, has a great track record of the boards and commissions. Mm-hmm. I think people take the job seriously. In some cases, they find out it's a little more work than they bargained for because the members of this commission will suddenly be inundated with people that have an opinion. And they will find themselves in a very similar situation that we do day in and day out. So, but I think people take the job seriously, and we've had just a great track record. So that's, again, part of my rationale for being willing to give this a shot. And Ms. Means?
I just had a question for Sergeant Perlick. Were you questioning subdivision 2, the section A, about The mayor will request that the Rochester branch of the NAACP provide additional nominations, or that the Human Rights Commission would provide additional information specifically. And I saw that. Is that what your question, your comment?
What I'm looking at here is in subdivision 2, I'm just wondering why C itself couldn't satisfy.
I tell you, my opinion is that, you know, over the years, there's been a conflict about racial profiling, and the NAACP has been intricately involved in that over the years, as well as the Human Rights Commission. And those of you who have the history of the Human Rights Commission can remember the activity that had taken place when there was just one ethnic group that was targeted. And I think it's important to have those two organizations intricately involved, because they're the ones that represent. Am I correct, President Jordan?
I would concur with that. I think that both of those organizations are social justice organizations, and there are other organizations that may be interested, but it may not be that social justice may not be their mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it dealt more with racial profiling and that violation of human rights.
Mr. Woodard.
The one thing, thank you for the comments. I agree. It's not part of the ordinance, but I guess it's my expectation for all these committees that whoever is staffing these committees, and to make sure that there's good education, good training for the people coming onto these boards, yeah, is kind of fundamental to them doing the right job. So while it's not in here, my expectation is, you know, there would be lots of interaction between the department and people that came onto the boards. You'd probably put together an orientation package for people coming on. I agree. Absolutely critical that they know what they're talking about when they make their decision. So thank you for that.
Okay. Well, where we're at right now is, based on discussion, the group will go back and consider, and we'll see perhaps a revision in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Any other comments on this one?
2 weeks or 1 week?
Yeah. Second is next week.
February 2nd.
Time
flies. Time flies. Yeah. Okay. There you go. Get busy.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Moving on to our next item, which is a discussion of the City of Rochester participation in the Region 1 Powers Emergency Management Board. Aaron,
you're gonna fix my problem.
I tried out my PlayStation on here. It actually, the refresh rate isn't very good. It doesn't work. I was just curious. I had to try it once. I tried my PlayStation on there. It does. But, you know, they don't make final decisions. They make recommendations.
That is true.
So.
But if they keep presenting, that's like I was saying, this city you could have everybody on every committee.
Yeah, they're probably all for nothing.
Yep.
And I deliberately watch for that.
Yep.
Or I always say, too, no committee is more than one committee.
You know what? The planning staff would say that for sure. But I tell you what, have you ever been to one of their meetings? The Planning and Zoning Commission, since we got the attorneys on there?
I'm going to go look now.
No.
They are incredibly thorough.
All right,
they really, really
ready to go?
I'm not sure why it's not showing up here.
We'll get back to business here. Ken is going to lead us through this discussion.
Wow. Let's see if...
It's right now says it's searching for content.
Be consistent. Open the quick share drive and start the software application. That's all I know. I read on the screen.
You memorized this.
That's all I know.
Yeah, but you're the high-tech guy.
Thank you.
That's right. Anybody that can schedule ice for 20 years, you do just about anything.
It seemed like 20. I only did it for 12 years.
Where's our second people in the
So you guys all are doing that now?
Yes.
Along with everything else. So mixed results.
Then we're done.
Earning his big bucks. Has he ever gotten a raise?
You don't build it into the system. CPI is your friend. Otherwise, I think it's been 15 years.
Thank you very much. So, we have to use it more often.
It's all right, you do.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. We're here today to discuss the request to join the Region 1 Emergency Management Joint Powers Board. Thought it would be helpful just to give you a little background. It wasn't an easy thing to come about, and I thought you might like or appreciate, or it might be helpful just to understand the backstory. So Act 1 begins with the attacks on 9/11, and the fact that afterwards there was a big push in the United States to prepare for respond to and recover from disasters related to terrorism. A lot of the Department of Justice grants were converted over to emergency management grants, and in the early years, a lot of money was given directly to jurisdictions to take care of things. I believe that's how we got our mobile support unit and some other things, was some of that early Homeland Security grant funding. But as time went by, and DHS was put together, they really took all the grant programs and they decided that they wanted to streamline it. And instead of giving it to individual jurisdictions, they wanted to give it to, at first, counties to support all the cities in the county, and then finally to a region. But in order for the state to provide money to the region, they asked all the regional groups to form, either through a memorandum of understanding or through a joint powers board. And using some sort of formal agreement, then they would give up Homeland Security funding directly to those groups to be able to use for different things. Now, some of the things that they used early on were for equipment. Video conferencing systems was something that was provided to all the counties, as well as armor radios. They bought a video ID card system, Identisys card system. So there's a few pieces of equipment that are running around out there. But for the most part, the state has gotten to the point where they have said, we no longer want you to be using this money for equipment, and instead what we would like you to be doing is just use this money to get together jointly, to plan, to train, to exercise, to be ready for a disaster. As time went on, the city separated from the county as far as emergency management. We passed our own ordinance. We implemented our own emergency operations plan. And we opted out of the county plan. So we set ourselves up as a separate jurisdiction. In 2011, the city became a city of the first class. We got our EOP approved. And in 2012, the state of Minnesota gave the city of Rochester Emergency Management Program grant funds. Now, what that did was that brought on some requirements that said, we would like you to adhere to the strict requirements that we have for emergency planning. And if you do that, we'll give you the money. But essentially, they give the EMPG funds to all the counties and to the cities of the first class. On the other hand, the mayor of every city in Minnesota
is responsible for emergency management. If a disaster happens, whether you are Yoda or whether you're Rochester or any town in between, the mayor is expected to run things. So what does that mean with the county? Where does the county come into this? Well, the county gets the EMPG funds and makes sure that their emergency operations plan adheres to the state guidelines, and that covers all the cities, Stuartville, Yoda, Orinoco, Byron. Those cities fall under the county plan. City of Rochester is a city in the first class, is deemed to be large enough where they don't need to fall under the county plan. We can opt out of it, we did, and we can do other things like request the National Guard that other cities can't do. The mayor can go directly to the governor and request the Guard in a disaster. We can also get FEMA funding directly from FEMA instead of going through the county, a few other things like that. So there's a regional board. It's made up of the Southeast Region counties, and City of Rochester and Prairie Island is also in Region 1. The members of this group have always been the counties. As the city became a city of the first class, though, we went to the board and we said, we believe now that we have the EMPG grant, we're a city of the first class, we have all those responsibilities, we feel like we would like to join as a full member of the Joint Powers Board. And we request, in June of 2012, we requested that we become a member of that group. As we asked them if we could join, they essentially said, no, you can't join. We don't want you to become a member of this group. And really, I think what their view was is the Olmsted County would take care of it. We really don't need you to disperse the money anymore. As a matter of fact, if you join, then we'll have to divide things up. Instead of 16 ways, we'll have to divide it 17 ways. And the Prairie Island joins, we'll have to divide it 18 ways. And we really don't feel like we need to give you any money for this. So for the next year and a half, essentially what we did was we just decided that, well, maybe if they don't want us to participate, maybe we should just kind of hunker down and do our own thing. That brings us to Act Two. In 2013, roughly starting in 2012, the last half of 2012 to 2013, we got busy. We held exercises. We conducted our own threat, hazard identification, risk assessment. We did, we purchased things. We really just dug ourselves in and focused really hard on emergency preparation. And over the period of 2013, as I would go to the meetings occasionally in this area, not the regional meetings, but I would hear county folks say, we really don't know what's going on in the city. We feel excluded. We know that there's a lot of planning going on. We know that there's training and exercises going on, but we don't really feel included with that. And I says, well, you know, we're not really included in the other things, so we're just kind of taking care of business here at home. But gradually, Kevin Torkerson said, you know what, we really need to bridge the gap here. Let me reach out to the region and see if we can't get you to be a part of the group again. And I thought that was a very magnanimous act. And we started including them in more and more activities. In 2013, we filed a THIRA that was a joint THIRA. The City of Rochester took responsibility of it, and but we submitted it as both a city and a county THIRA for both groups. We also did a lot of other things with joint planning and training and things like that. And so over the period of 2014, Kevin worked really hard with the group, and we took a look at the agreement in several different months and couldn't get it moving. I took the agreement to Terry. I asked him if he would take a look at what we've got and see if we could draft something new. He made some suggestions. I took that back to the group and gave it to them. And it really seemed to jumpstart things. Then they found a county attorney in Fillmore County who took a greater look at it, and we eventually got to the point where they had drafted a brand new agreement. And in December, they voted again to see if they would include the city of Rochester and Prairie Island, and that brings us to Act 3. They, no suspense, they asked to if we would join, and at that point I said, that's great, we've been working on this for a long time, we'd really like to be a part of it regionally, and we finally got a good draft. You've got a copy in your packet of materials. But I wanted to give you a little bit of background, and so this SBAR highlights out some of the background that I've talked about today, but it also does a little bit of an assessment to talk about some of the strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats that exist with joining this group. In short, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea that any time that we can be a part of a group and be part of the discussion, that it's a good thing. Sometimes, to be honest with you, I wish I didn't have to go to these meetings. I don't feel very welcome. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of times where I speak where I feel that what I have to say is just not very welcome to be said, but I think it's respected. For example, for the most part, I tend to be a real stickler on the rules. If something that I think needs to be part of the Open Meetings Act or is part of a financial disclosure, I'm the sort of person that speaks up and says, would you please provide that report? Or, hang on a second, I don't think that we're doing this in a correct way. But I think that, for the most part, the group has been... It's just got to be a lot more cohesive than it was in the beginning, and now I think we just have an opportunity to take things and really work with everybody to improve. So the reason why I come to you today is to give you a little bit of background, to answer your questions, and to recommend that we join the Southeast Minnesota Region 1 Emergency Management Joint Powers Board.
Questions? Mr. Hippie.
So I see on your summary sheet the $1,000 annual membership fee. Do we have any other financial obligations beyond that?
I'm sorry, I was just...
No, that's all right. I see something in your summary sheet. There's a $1,000 annual association fee. Is there any financial obligation beyond that that we're signing up for?
Yes. The group has talked for a long time about getting insurance. They've hesitated getting insured, but they've been told that they need to purchase insurance for the video conferencing equipment, for the radios, and for the Identisys system, also to insure the board. They don't want to purchase the insurance because of the Municipal County Association, County Trust, Minnesota County Trust, I think. MCT is what it's called. It's very expensive. I think it's going to cost them between $30,000 and $35,000 to get a policy through them. They were informed by Olmsted County's financial representative that the C.O. Brown insurance person represents the League of Cities, also works with Olmsted County, and that person has said that, hey, if you get insurance through the League of Cities, we think it's going to cost you probably $15,000 to $20,000, so it would be a huge savings. And so we will have to pay a 1/18th share of what that insurance will be in the future. I have no idea what that premium would be exactly.
And this is liability insurance, or I was going to say, because if it's just for the equipment, you buy a lot of video equipment for $20,000 to $30,000 a year. Some of the numbers you cited.
Well, the League of Minnesota Cities would not speak to me directly, but I was able to speak to, let me put that back. Our C.O. Brown representative would not speak to me directly, but I did speak to somebody at the League of Cities, and they said, really what you need to do is think about What equipment do you have? And it doesn't sound like it's very much. But then you also want to know whether you want to insure the entire board or just the officers as part of the decisions. And how much money are you working with? Is the state giving you all of those, the type of decisions, the amount of money that you're overseeing, and the type of equipment will be factors that they will determine what the risk is and then what the premium will be.
So an example, let's say for sake of argument that you are our representative as a representative of the city of Rochester, are you not covered by virtue of your whatever professional liability insurance we have for you? Are you covered as a member?
Probably not. If the claim is against the Joint Powers Board, no.
Okay.
And that's why Joint Powers Board typically get their own insurance, like the South Zone Rural Watershed.
Yes, we have insurance.
So another example, just pulling one out of the air, like ROCOG, is that group makes independent decisions, but we have county and city representatives. We don't have insurance, do we?
I don't know.
Should we?
Maybe.
I got something to follow up on.
Asking the question. For
you're members of the EDA board, and you do have insurance through that also separately.
Through what? I'm sorry?
EDA. In Rochester Economic Development Board.
She just said that. Well, I mean, Mr. Hickey raises a good question in terms of we need to be transparent in terms of the actual cost, but this might be pointing out a broader issue we need to take up on another day. Mr. Mayor.
You have as one of the strengths is that we would be able to influence policy at the regional level. Do you have an example of what that might be that we wouldn't be able to do ourselves?
There are three really big grant programs in the Homeland Security world that influence us around this area. One is this state Homeland Security grant that's run through the Emergency Management Joint Powers Board. Then there is a healthcare alliance, and then there is a public health alliance. And the disaster, the healthcare folks have joined into a regional group called the Disaster Healthcare Coalition. There are two emergency management representatives on the group, and because I'm in Rochester, they wanted to appoint somebody from Rochester to attend that group, and they asked me to join. So now I'm a representative with that Disaster Health Coalition, and that was something that I had an interest to be a part of. Mayo Clinic took on the responsibility for that. But I really haven't been able to be a part of it because we haven't been part of the Joint Powers Board. Now with this pending agreement and you know, thinking that we're going to join them, they just went ahead and appointed me. And so that gives me a voice and to be able to talk you know, about doing things jointly with this group.
And I understand what you said, but I think the mayor touches on, I'm looking, what's the tangible value to the city of Rochester? Being part of a group is really nice, but what value are we bringing to our community that we couldn't achieve on our own belonging to this group? Mr. Bilderbeck has a question.
No, I have a comment. I know a little bit about this field. I believe one of the things that are important is, too, is when you realize that if you get together as a region, you get to know these folks, you work with them, we exercise with them, we build a stronger emergency preparedness program, not only for Rochester, but Southeast Minnesota. The fact is that by working with these other groups, we give ourselves more resources than we currently have. So that when we have disasters, be it the floods in Zumbro Falls or the issues in Orinoco, or when they had the Rushford floods, we were very active. Some of us wore our other hats on, very active in trying to bring those folks back. The fact is, having Mr. Jones as part of the Southeast Coalition, which I am a part of the Southeast Health Coalition in Minnesota, Region 1 area, it gives us a better reach and gives us better accessibility to groups out there and to have resources that we may not have today. We're very fortunate in Rochester versus many communities that we have agreements that we have the CAT team, the chemical assessment team. We also have a building collapse unit here in Rochester. That's something other groups don't have. But in the same token, there are other things that they have that we don't. Maybe look at the county or the fire department and say, well, they have some rescue, lake rescue, but they don't have the big equipment they might need on the river that Winona County has, and things of that nature, or Wabasha County that we might be able to use from them. So bringing in that group of knowledge and sharing that knowledge base is a huge asset. And I, for one, think it's long overdue for us to be a part of Southeast Region 1. I do attend some of the meetings up at when the Minnesota emergency managers get together, and I have attended those. I am a Homeland Security Emergency Management certified through the state, which all these folks are supposed to be. They're the county director of emergency management. But they do get together. It does give great opportunities to train together, to share resources. And I thank Sheriff Torkenson for his efforts into helping us get become a part of it.
Now, we already belong to the Regional Radio Board and so forth, so we get that opportunity to collaborate with other communities in our region and so forth. So, again, I'm looking for what's the additional value we get. Mr. Woodrick.
You believe this is a good thing?
I do.
That's
and I will comment on
it's good for me.
Not every county in the Southeast Minnesota is a part of the 800 mega regional board.
Right.
Not everybody is. So this is.
I Mark is an incredible resource for this type of activity, and I trust his professional judgment on the value, so I'm okay with that.
Other Mr. Campion, and then Ms. Mead.
I did find myself asking that same question as President Staver here about the value. It's not to judge anyone's ability. More, the statement here doesn't really necessarily lay out the economics of participation. And I think one of the questions that comes to mind, when we're talking about sharing of equipment. And I assume that this, and I read through the agreement, but didn't see necessarily specific line items. But I mean, our assets become accessible via this contractual agreement. They will be able to take advantage of some of the unique abilities that we have in Rochester. Is that true?
No. Hey. No, it isn't. In order for us to, right now, if we had a disaster, something happened, let's say it was Maurer County, and they needed, there are some assets that the state has funded that kind of, that by agreement, kind of belong to the state. Our chemical assessment team, our structural collapse team, we've gotten funding to provide equipment and training for those folks. And so if they have a hazardous materials disaster or building collapse, they will call the Minnesota duty officer, who will then locate the lowest or the nearest structural class team capability assessment team, and then send them down, and they will take care of things. But if they wanted generators from us, or if they wanted something else, they would simply, Maurer County would contact the Minnesota duty officer, they would then contact us, and we would decide at that point if we wanted to let that equipment go.
Okay.
Now we could sign a mutual aid agreement, and a mutual aid agreement might say that if a disaster happens, they can contact us directly. They would have to go to the state, and then we would provide that equipment. And we could decide in the mutual aid agreement whether we would charge for that equipment or not. There's always a risk that under a mutual aid agreement that you end up giving up equipment and people, and for a period of time, and it costs you out of pocket, and you don't get any money back.
Sure. I want to make sure we understand the full ramifications financially, but it sounds like it's $1,000 plus 1/18th of up to $30,000 for insurance, so we're probably talking about less than $3,000 for this. It's probably, if it's the recommendation of staff that we do it, I guess.
Is this something that we would have to annually decide to participate or not? In other words, would we get a point in the future where we might choose to say, well, the benefits haven't been worth what we've invested?
Could we drop out?
Yeah.
I'm not the person to ask that question.
I thought there was a provision that
termination. Section 11.
Section 11, you said?
Yes.
Based on our BU experience, it's always good to be able to drop out of things.
You've written notice to the other parties for certain continuing obligations.
I think you can drop off.
Again, it's a relatively small amount. I'm willing to give it a shot, knowing that it doesn't seem to provide the value we expect or thought that it would, we can drop out. Mr. Newman.
I have just two language questions. In 8.1, it says dues may be assessed on new parties as outlined in the bylaws. I assume all parties are paying dues, probably.
Well, yes, this year they are. And in the past discussions, when we really discussed this at length in 2014, they were not going to assess dues upon themselves, but were only going to assess dues on new people entering. But they, I don't see the, right now, the only invoice I've seen is one that has been given to all of the members equally. And so everybody is expected to spend $1,000 this year. And I haven't seen an invoice that is $1,000 for a new member, although it was discussed in the past, and they could come back and issue that. So it could be another $1,000 on top of that.
Yeah, that's something to watch out for. Then under 8.2, do you have any concern where it says, and state grant funds may be made available directly to county parties with the intention that the funds be expended for the benefit also of jurisdictions within the county? So I suppose we're not paying a lot of money into this, but it's not a big deal, but just references that the funds may be available to county parties, so we're not, so we'd be relying on Homestead County as we are now, correct?
That's the way I read it. You know, thanks for pointing that out. What I did in the past with this is I went through and I asked them to take out all references to the county and change that with
all
jurisdictions.
All parties, all members,
yeah.
Jurisdictions, right?
And I think that we can go back and ask that to be amended.
Beyond that, has the city attorney's office reviewed this agreement?
Yes, and I've been working with that assistant county attorney ongoing over several concerns I had, changes were made.
Okay, so this isn't the document we would approve anyway.
Pardon?
This is not the document we would approve anyway.
Yes, it will be with the discovery of the word county that should not be in there.
Okay. All right, other questions, comments?
I just want to make sure that the language treats us equal to others in terms of anything like
right.
Dues. So, and that doesn't, is that not in there right now?
Right now, the word county is in there.
Okay.
He, as Kim said, he asked that all references to county be removed, and either they missed it or they're not willing to take out this one. And
okay.
We'll ask them to take it out.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, I think that this is a small amount. I don't know what. Whose budget is coming out? I've discovered out of your budget. Okay, it's a small amount. I think it's worth it to work together. I think we benefit greatly when we share resources and ideas. And the one thing I'm kind of curious about is the threat that you mentioned. And also, I'm so pleased that Kevin Torgerson has. Adopted or promoted or invited you to join in on this, because I can remember the time when it wasn't so collaborative.
Right.
So this is really a good thing. It's nice to see the county and the city work together. I'm wondering about this threat, you know, this without adhering strictly to government laws. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, that means that they don't adhere to the laws. That we're going, are you going to be sued or what?
One of the in the review of the early agreement, one of the things that I pointed out to Terry is that we had several members who would appear by video conference and would not appear in person. So there was a question that was raised to me about the Open Meetings Act and the ability to attend by video conference to make it a quorum. And so that's a point of discussion with the group right now. That would be one example. Another thing that I see that is a concern to me is I don't know when the last time I saw a financial report to know exactly what the finances are. We'll have a report within the agreement, but Maurer County was a representative last year, and they either forgot the stuff at home or did a oral report, or I don't have anything to report or whatever. And so it's been a long time since I've seen a financial statement. That's a concern. And in 2012, when they voted for membership, they asked me to leave the room. I didn't think it was a big deal, but looking back at it on an open meetings, under the Open Meetings Act, they would have had to close off the meeting, and there were a few other things that they really didn't do. So, you know, they're nice folks, and they just want to get things done, but they don't necessarily take the Joint Powers Board as a real serious thing.
You're not giving me a good
warning.
And honestly, when you look at it, many of the counties, they don't have full-time emergency managers. Most of these folks have 3-4 different hats that they wear. So it's having somebody there who can help steer that communications and the ideas of the way that this should be operated, I think, is a plus for this area. And again, remember when you're dealing with the counties, the big thing is many of these folks, they only have 3 hats to wear. They're fairly lucky. So it's even like in hospitals, many of your emergency management people, because there's a lot of accreditation issues go along with it, are assigned to your grounds crew, or assigned to whoever runs your general service operations. So they have multiple hats. So having some direction and having some people who have some more professional studies and understanding of this is only going to strengthen this southeast region.
I mean, I don't doubt that we're going to bring expertise that's extremely valuable to this group, but I think that it's worth noting that, you know, we should see a financial statement about the
definitely
situation in the organization before we consider
don't
joining.
Argue that.
Can we put that on them, or are they offering to provide
well,
that?
You know what? I won't bring this to you form. It has to come before council. We have to authorize the mayor to sign the agreement. I won't bring that to you until I get this issue about the county resolved, and I'll also get the issue about a financial statement resolved.
Okay. I would guess it would be difficult for us, or for them to become insured if they didn't have a financial statement.
Right. So.
And also, you mentioned about the open meeting law, too, that, you know, with the telephone conference calls, and is that, well, you mentioned about the conflict with the telephone conference and it being a violation of the open meeting law, I think.
You can't hold a local agency, a local government entity cannot hold a meeting by way of the telephone unless a gubernatorial declaration of emergency is in effect or there is a health pandemic.
That's pretty
clear. Telephone conference calls cannot work unless there's an emergency directive.
In Minnesota, local governments cannot meet by way of the telephone unless, one, the governor has declared a state of emergency, or two, there is a health pandemic declaration in effect.
Well, we got the language. You'll bring that up, I suppose. Local government cannot meet by telephone unless there's an emergency statement provided by the governor?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I think that maybe it would be good if I came in and just gave you all the positives. But I haven't really had to say much about the positives earlier. Mr. Bilderbach really said what I feel. None of this emergency management stuff has been warm and fuzzy. A lot of it early on has been very contentious. When I first went to the region, a lot of people didn't even introduce themselves, acknowledge me, speak to me. That happened for a long time. So it's been a long time of taking this and building a relationship. And there are some rough edges. On the whole, I think we're better off. I think we're better off as a city to participate with this. But it would not, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't lay it out straight to you.
Okay, well, let's see what you come back with. All right, one very brief item to end the day. The calendar was attached to your packet. My apologies, but a more current one went out today, yep. And you should have received that by email. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to do, I'm working with IT staff to get it published on the city website, so it'll be immediately available to council members, staff, and the public. So stay tuned. I'll try to get that done tomorrow. It's been set up, and so we'll... That way you'll know where the most current version is. It'll always be out available by our website. So
if there are changes, will they highlight the updates?
I can.
You know, sometimes when you get a lot of paper, you wonder, okay, what are the changes? And then you're going finger to finger.
I'll try to do that too.
Yeah. Cool.
Just one informational item. Some of you might have caught this in the Star Tribune, but there was an absolutely fantastic infographic talking about county tax generation and tax spending. And what it did, and I actually downloaded all the data from it as well, but it goes into every county in the state, what their net surplus or deficit is to the state. And Olmsted County was fourth in terms of absolute numbers. We send $143 million more to the state than we get back. You know, so I think...
Robert Dayton was wrong.
He could have been right because this could be more updated data as well.
I'm just teasing.
Yeah, every, you know, as you would expect, basically every one of these places that are getting the city sales tax dollars are already receiving our state tax dollars. It's just a fascinating piece of data, and I'm going to send out the spreadsheet. I got the spreadsheet with all the data in it to the council just to play around with. But in absolute, we're the fourth worst in the state in terms of our return on investment to the state, and per capita, we're fifth worst in the state out of 87 counties. And I bring this up because we have such a perception that we fight, that you guys got DMC, you're not getting anything else. Maybe if we maximize the DMC contributions, we might knock off 1/7 of this.
So we might move on to eighth.
And that's just it. It's, you know, this perception that we can't get anything done down here because of DMC. We have got to aggressively fight that up at the state level.
All right. Yeah. Send it out.
Yeah.
Just a quick one. We passed a taxi cab ordinance a while ago, and one of the things that went in there was a requirement that cab drivers get permits. And one of the restrictions on getting a permit is not having a conviction for a violent crime in the past.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of cab drivers apparently have convictions for violent crimes. There is a provision in state law that gives them an opportunity to come in and convince you that they've been rehabilitated. It's the same process that you've used for the massage. So you may have some public hearings coming up from the cabbies who want to get there.
We inform companies of, you know, how it'll work once they submit their application. We'll background check, and then we'll let them know if anybody has not eligible for license and they come to appeal. So we'll see. I'm not sure how the companies will handle it. I mean, it's up to them to kind of how they want to move forward. But we have to let them know that at least. But I also had to stress to everybody that the city wasn't pushing for this. I mean, Terry Spade and I kind of sat in and we served as a resource for that task force, but the members of that task force made this recommendation, which included the companies.
Okay, good. Well, we'll see what
that is. More fun stuff.
I was stunned with how many that actually, eight of them at Yellow Cab.
You said we're adjourned.